driving the lane. Crosses up Van Hula. Okie doke move and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get her own rebound. Kicks it out. Give it back for three. No,
from local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Happy Thursday, birds. Welcome into this edition of the Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. I'm Mikey Finelli, joined by Dane Dreyfus and David Moses. As always, I've called us the Miami Heat's Big Three in the past, but today we are Jordan, Pippen, and Rodman, because our first segment, we want to talk a lot about seeing red. The Chicago Bulls back in action this week, and I have a quick question for you guys. I always like to start the show with the question, who was your guys' favorite Bulls player as a kid?
Oh, that's tough. I'm gonna let Demos take the lead on this one.
I think I was asked this like our first show.
I think we talked about D Rose specifically.
Yeah,
let's say D Rose is the cheap answer. Everyone loves Derrick Rose. So besides Derrick Rose,
I could go a couple of different area of people here, but I'm probably gonna have to go with Joakim Noah. Oh my god,
yeah, he was awesome.
He played. He was the heart and soul of our team back in
What's so good about Cleveland?
What's so good about Cleveland? I just love the way he played. He played with so much intensity, effort, and it really showed out on the court because he was an anchor at that center position.
He's like one of the last like true defensive 10-10 guys. But kind of a dying breed that's not in the NBA anymore. But Finelli, I'm gonna ask you to go next because I've got my hands in my face. I literally can't think because there's like three guys that I'm rotating in my head.
Okay, I know this wasn't when we were kids. I was 15, 16 years old by this time, but. I mean, I loved D-Wade as a Bull. He was
really
for 1 year. I mean, I know it was only 1 year. I wish it could have been longer. I loved Dwayne Wade. I always did. And to see him as a Bull was just so cool.
You know,
that year we talked about it before on the pod before. That year could have been so much more than it was.
They had some good games. You know, I don't know.
I actually loved that team in general because the two players I'm stuck between right now because. Like, I was like, as a kid, I was like, I wasn't a huge fan of the Rose, Boozer, Luol Deng era.
Really?
Like, I actually really enjoyed the Dwayne Wade, Rajon Rondo, Jimmy Butler team. And I'm going to, just because it's Stacey King, I think I have to go with Jimmy Butler.
Yeah,
but I just can't wait for Rajon Rondo to be a coach in the NBA someday because he's one of the most, like, heady players in the game, just an absolute student of basketball. But I'm going to go with Jimmy Butler.
Don't forget about Pau Gasol. Bulls
either,
where he was averaging
true.
A triple-double. He was awesome.
I think we said it earlier on the pod, but that Bulls team would have beaten the Celtics.
Oh, yeah.
No question.
Oh, yeah.
If Rajon Rondo stays healthy.
Let's talk the 2022-2023 Chicago Bulls coming into a tough Eastern Conference following a great season last year that they never really got over those other top competitors and then ended up falling to the Bucks in the first round of the playoffs. What are we looking at for this Bulls team just in the first week of preseason games? What is to be expected?
Well, it's going to be who's going to be the starting point guard.
It's the first point.
Lonzo Ball is done for the foreseeable future, and it's kind of like, I don't know if he suits up again this season.
They're optimistic. They're optimistic that he will.
They were optimistic
he
last
is.
Year.
Yeah, and it sounds like it's one of those injuries that's a lingering one. It's not really showing too much progression.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what the deal on that Lonzo situation is, but I do agree the point guard position is going to be one of the key focal points, I think, going into the year that the Bulls are going to have to focus on. It looks like they like their second-year player, Ayo Dosunmu. He had a really good rookie year, so I think they're rolling with him. I know Kobe White is dealing with a little bit of an injury. But I don't know, man. I think if I'm a Bulls fan, which I am, I'm looking for some continuity. They had a year last year where it was a really good year to start off, and then injuries got in the way. Didn't really, you know, help them, but it played a factor into when they played those teams like the 76ers, the Miami Heat, the Milwaukee Bucks. They just started to really show their weaknesses, and I would love to see some continuity from some of their highs last year.
I mean, I think it's Io's job to lose, Like, this team is just so weird, because I wouldn't mind seeing Caruso as the starting point guard just to have that defensive aspect of Lonzo's game not lost from the starting five. But I think you go Io to get more of the off-ball skills, and you get, like, the defensive anchor in Patrick Williams, because I personally believe that Patrick Williams, the season rests on his shoulders. Like, he's going to be the glue that brings this team together if they're going to make any noise in the playoffs. And I think this needs to turn into more of Levine's team than DeRozan's, because that, like, they're paying him the money to do so. And he's the younger talent. He's going to be here longer, hopefully, than DeMar DeRozan. But I like, and I love DeMar taking those shots to end those games. But you almost, it started off as Levine's team, but then as DeMar started to hit those buzzer beaters, there was a change in the season, and it got more fun because we were winning games. But it just felt like, we're not going to win anything with DeMar as the guy. It's got to be Zach.
So you know how Dosunmu kind of got into that lineup more frequently as the season went on because they started to play him at different spots? That's what I think about Dalen Terry this year, their draft pick. He has shown in some of these preseason games, that in the summer league games I saw, that he has that ability to just be that player, that guard that can play defensively, that can move the ball, can play anywhere on the court. And I think that's why they drafted him, because originally – you're thinking, why are they drafting another guard when they have such a, at the time you thought Lonzo was still going to come back and you have the Kobe Whites and the Ayo Dosunmus of the world, and now you have another guard. But it seems like he's the type of player that you can fit in anywhere from the five and he'd be fine. And he's a tall guy, so maybe even there.
And they needed size, too.
I was going to say, he's a pretty versatile player. Even on Google, I'm literally looking at it right now, it says he's listed as a small forward. I know he has played a ton of guard, and I think the first preseason game they played a couple of nights ago, he was at the point guard position. But he's a versatile guy, and he brings a lot of energy to that second unit. You were talking about Alex Caruso debating on if he should be the starter. I think he might fit better in that second unit just because he brings a veteran presence, a veteran energy that, you know, your starters can't play the whole entire game, so that when that second unit comes out, they'll have a trusty Alex Caruso coming in at point guard to be able to kind of lead that second unit. It's full of young guys. I know they've got Andre Drummond this year, which in my opinion was one of the steals of the offseason. Just watching his series he had back with Brooklyn against, I believe it was the Cavaliers, total domination. I think that's what the Bulls needed, a lot of rebounding and just that dirty play in the post. He's going to give that to them. I like what this Bulls team looks like. Let's see what they can do, because like you both said, they are going against a very talented Eastern Conference.
The Beastern Conference, one would say. But I'm not confident in this season. I don't think enough has been done. I personally believe that the Bulls have two top 25, maybe top 20 players, and that's just not enough to get it done in this current league. You need at least two top 15 guys or three top 20. Like, it's just not enough.
So would your outlook on it change if there was a healthy Lonzo? Because he had a really good season last year.
He makes it a more complete lineup, but Lonzo Ball, the best ability is availability, and he's been averaging 30, 40 games a season.
Yep.
And it you can tell by the time he goes down that it's almost time to throw in the towel because the team is scrambling. But I'll tell you what, Billy Donovan has not been afraid to play his younger players, which he showed last year in Io and Patrick Williams before he got injured. I mean, what was it, two or three games into the season?
Right, but even towards the end I think he came back for the playoffs, correct?
And they got him into that rotation. They gave him some serious minutes. And honestly, I think it was their last playoff game of the year against, what was it, the Bucks?
Yeah.
Yep.
He led the team in scoring, so
I think he dropped 30, right?
I don't know if it was 30. I think it might have been 25, but it was flashes. That's all that matters. It was flashes as the player he could be. And hopefully Dalen Terry can have some of that same rookie magic that you get from the late first round, because you also don't necessarily get much confidence from non-lottery picks. I personally don't even get confidence from lottery picks that are past pick 10. Like, you get your rare Donovan Mitchells, Tyler Heroes, but
I think this year they are kind of only looking at the top two picks. I can't pronounce his last name.
Wembanyama.
Yeah, and that Scoot Henderson, that's all the people care about these days.
Well, I think one thing before we leave the Bulls and look broader that you have to think about, and maybe this is looking broader a little bit, I don't think a team is championship ready until they have built that young core and then can attract a superstar. And, okay, Levine is a homegrown superstar, and DeMar is past his prime, but a superstar. You look at this team and you think, if they can be good enough, this season or about halfway through the season, you can maybe bring in somebody who just puts them over the edge.
But who's in this next free agent class that you're
looking at? That's the problem. And I think bringing in Andre Drummond over the offseason is a good move, but again, he's not really as fresh as he once was. And I think that's the problem. And that's why I actually really thought the Bulls should do something about Kevin Durant. But I'm sure that they thought about it, but the trade package probably would have been so heavy that it wouldn't have been worth it. Yeah.
The return on investment would be?
I mean, but that would have put him over the edge unless they gave away too much.
Well, I was actually talking to one of my Detroit insiders. His name's Cade Kenyon. And he was telling me about what a weird era in basketball we're in. Because it's probably the most, like the oldest superstar group that we've ever had. Like you look at like guys like Chris Paul, James Harden, Kevin Durant, and LeBron still playing well into their 30s. This isn't like a normal thing in this era of basketball. And then the middle is kind of weak, and then on the lower side of the spectrum you've got your Ja Morant, your Zion Williamsons, your Devin Booker's. Like these guys are all 24 and younger, and it's like there's this like middle gap where you're not getting great free agent classes.
Well, I don't think superstars were originally meant to play this long and be superstars for that long. Naturally they're used to be some more turnover. I mean, I know they both had separate health issues, but Magic and Bird only played 13 or so years, each of them. I mean, it's and LeBron's in year 20 now, and he's up there in the top five in the league.
So that's just the power of evolution with the new doctors. I think I read somewhere LeBron spends over $1 million on his body every offseason.
I believe it.
Yeah.
Along with Chris Paul and a number of other players. They really invest into their workout regimens to be able to keep their bodies intact for the regular season. It's an 82-game regular season. That's a gruesome schedule
They don't play 82 games.
but for a lot of those guys, they do end up probably playing close to 82 games because add on the extra 20, 30 playoff games they're going to end up playing if those series all go the whole way.
That brings in the conversation. I think they need to lower the length of the season if these players are going to do load management. Like, I'm fine. Like, and I respect them for taking control of their body and knowing what their body can and can't take, but that's a NBA PA or NBA Players Association problem. Like, you need to if 82 games is too much, you need to put that into your contracts and stuff.
I think they're far from that. I actually read that they are trying to implement a mid-season tournament.
I saw that,
and I just don't see how that can be of any type of significance to players, to the culture of the game. It's like, what are you playing for?
Money.
It could be the money aspect of it.
And I'm not saying that to argue with what you're saying. I'm saying that's why the NBA will never actually lower the season. That's why the MLB will never actually lower the season. Well, it's all about following the money. You add an extra game to any team's schedule, all of a sudden that's an extra couple $100,000 they're making. Yeah, exactly. So this is, and you know how much more money NFL teams are making this year and last year because they have just one extra game? I don't think there's anywhere the NBA can go but more games.
Technically, two extra games, week 18 game, and then the Super Bowl week, wild card game.
Right. Yeah. So there's they changed the format of the playoffs just like they did in the MLB this year, and now all of a sudden this week we're looking at a wild card series week instead of just a wild card game.
Yeah.
It's all about adding more games. It's all about adding more money.
The evolution of the game, man.
Well, exactly.
And I think every like diehard NBA fan knows like truly that the NBA, if the season was ran correctly, tip off should be on Christmas Day. That's when the season should be starting. Gives them a nice long break, lets them get healthy, get workouts in the summer, and it's a longer off season. You don't have that hockey NBA overlap. Not that there's much competition between the two sports. NBA still kind of dominates that. But it's better for both games, in my opinion. And then also, too, you get less load management from players. And that's why a player like Kobe is just so lost from the game of the NBA, because he would play injured. And, like, I remember Vanessa Bryant, like, had a quote where she was like, he would play hurt because he was like, what if, there's a Laker fan that comes out and it's the only game they can afford and I have a hurt pinky, so I'm not going to play and he's not going to be able to see me? He's like, no, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to play. Mm. Where now it's like, you know what? I'm feeling a little tight. I'm not even going to bother trying to work it out. I'm just going to sit this one out. I mean, we're playing the T-Wolves. Who cares?
Well, I mean, I like the Christmas Day tip-off thing, but that's 2.5 months of money there that the NBA is losing, and that's the problem. Because that's why the NBA and the team owners would never go for that. That's why when the MLB missed half of its usually scheduled season or more in the COVID year, that's why so many MLB teams lost so much money. And the quote reason why we couldn't re-sign Bryant, Rizzo, and Baez, but that's why they lost all their money, because they said they missed 100 games, and that's a lot of money. So to take games off a schedule was just, I don't think they would ever agree to that.
It's supply and demand, though. The less games you have, the more people are going to tune in. It's what the NFL has. They're only an 18-week season, and obviously they added a week. I personally don't know if it necessarily helps the sport all that much. I think it's more of just like a that's more of like a stadium thing, like selling tickets more than it is viewership. But I think it would help viewership if you had fewer games, because I would tune in more, because I feel like there's more. Like, it's the same thing with baseball. If baseball had an 81 game season, I'd be playing fantasy baseball. I'd be tuning into games. So I personally think that sports is going more towards the shorter end of the season.
But what is it about having a smaller season that would make it more attractive?
Supply and demand. There's not much competition. Like, during NBA season, I'm not watching NBA because I'm a hockey fan.
But, you know, that changes a lot. So if you are starting, you know, mid-December, late December, you're probably eliminating around somewhere up to 20, 25 games.
Well, you got to remember the season's going to go later, too. So I'm not saying move the start.
That's what my question
but
is.
But you still want them to play 82 games?
It's about 60.
I can see that. I think there's something to be said for players' associations and unions wanting that. I mean, I know the MLB has talked about that, making it 140-something games. Just take just an extra, you know, couple weeks off the end of either side. And I think the players would be going for that, but there's no way any ownership group would agree to that, because it's the money, and they smell it. So I think that's all the time we got for this segment here. We started with the Bulls. We got all the way off on talking about ticket sales and more, but we'll have to see if we make it out to a Bulls game together this year. How about that, boys?
That sounds electric.
Are you Mikey?
Oh, we'll talk about that one later. Coming up after the break, we're going to have Shea Kubo on of Redbird Baseball. Make sure to stay tuned. You're listening to The Red Zone.
Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
And welcome back to the WZND studio here for this edition of The Red Zone. Dane, David, and I are joined by Shea Kubo, an infielder from ISU's baseball team. I know we're out of baseball season, but there's no better time than now, and it's getting a little bit cold to get excited for the spring and for the green grass out there at Duffy Bass Field. So, Shea, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So I know you've only been in Normal for a little bit, a transfer from Northern Colorado, University of Northern Colorado. But in the little time you've been in Normal or Bloomington, what is the best food stop or one of the best food stops you think you've been to yet?
That's a good question.
Or like a post-practice favorite spot for you?
Honestly, we were talking about it a little bit earlier, but kind of a pre-practice or like a breakfast after weights would be a Bloomington Cafe. We've been going there quite a bit, actually, like me and my roommates. We like to stop by and get their hobo skillet. It's been kind of a popular thing for us, but I feel like that's kind of been our go-to right now. I haven't really gotten the time to explore everywhere else, but that's been the go-to.
It's actually kind of refreshing to hear that, because every person we have on, every athlete we have on, seems to want to favorite the La Bamba sushi. Have you had that yet in Uptown Normal?
No, I have
not. It's a restaurant that has both tacos and sushi, which makes people sometimes get a little scared of it, but it's pretty good, so... It's somewhere to check out.
Midwestern sushi can always be a little suspect, though. Let's be real.
Yeah, good point.
Such an interesting combination right there. But, you know, I'm going to stay on to the entrance side of things. I was going to ask you, give me your top three favorite sports movies. No order, just what do you think?
That's a tough one.
Dang, that's a tough question.
Or at least maybe one or two that you're a huge fan of.
Yeah,
42.
Great movie. Rest in peace, Chadwick Boseman.
Yeah.
Legend. And Jackie Robinson.
Yeah.
Honestly, maybe Moneyball.
Moneyball.
Yeah, that's another good one.
That's nice.
Love that. And I love that both of them are two of the best baseball movies ever. I love to hear that. So just talking a little bit about your baseball experience, when did you start playing and what got you into it?
I kind of just started playing when I was young, 4 or 5. I don't know, whenever my dad said, here's a bat and glove, go for it.
You're from Hawaii, correct?
Yeah.
Am I correct in saying that? So when did you move? When you came to Colorado, was that when you first came over, or where was that? Where was that transition?
So I grew up in Hawaii, just played throughout my high school, and then got recruited, and I went to Northern Colorado.
Right.
And then played like 2 or 3 years there, and then now I'm here.
Was there a big difference between playing in Hawaii versus Colorado early on?
Honestly, I feel like the biggest difference would be that in Hawaii, like, you really know everyone you're playing against. So, like, you grew up playing against them, and then everyone just kind of grew up playing together. So it's kind of personal when you lose or win. And then, like, when you get to college, I feel like it's more business-like. I feel like it's just go win at any cost. And it's not as, like, oh, okay, like, you lost to this guy.
So, you know, last year in Colorado when you were playing, you took a really big production in what you did for the team. You led the team with home runs with 8, including 64 hits, 13 doubles, and a triple. Does your production or your identity sort of change as you're coming to a new environment at ISU? If not, you know, do you expect it to as the weeks go on?
Honestly, I don't really expect it to that much. I mean, I've never been a home run hitter, so I don't know what happened last year, but it just kind of just fell into place. But honestly, I'm just trying to hit singles and doubles. Like, I've just been trying to go to the opposite field, like, a lot. And we have some big guys this year, some guys that have some power, like Judah Morris and, like, Danny Pacella. He's a freshman. He's got some real thump. Like, he has, like, 4 or 5 home runs in the fall already. And it's just, I've kind of just been sticking to myself, just trying to hit the ball the other way and just not trying to do too much. So I'm kind of just staying around.
So was that what you would say, like, helped your approach and your raise in production too? Was that something you were doing at Northern Colorado as well, or something that you're trying to implement to your game more here?
Yeah, I mean, that's something I took into my sophomore year and my junior year at Northern Colorado. I kind of just said hit the ball hard back up the middle to the right side, and if you hit it out, you hit it out. Like, I'm just trying to hit the ball hard somewhere, not really trying to do too much, and whatever happens, happens.
Is there a certain major league player that you think you model your swing or your total game over?
Honestly, I've been watching a lot of Alex Bregman, and I feel like I've been keeping track of him throughout like my progression in my career. But I follow him a lot. I follow like a lot of the things he talks about with his hands and what he's really feeling. I kind of take after a lot of my swing.
And Alex Bregman, he's a third baseman for the Houston Astros. You're playing at second. How would you say like that affects like your defensive game, where you're trying to implement that?
Honestly, for me, watching guys is more like their routines, I would say, as an infielder. It's not really like his game, his in-game things. Like, yeah, like he's a third baseman, but I feel like for me at second base, it's kind of just me just going about my things. I don't really like idolize Bregman like for his like defense stuff. I'm more of like,
gotcha,
his like hitting thing.
Very cool. Do you have any superstitions possibly? Because you talk about routine, baseball is known to have some crazy superstitions.
Just don't step on the line.
Don't step on the line.
that's kind of a thing for me. Maybe like a pre-at-bat routine. Like, I've always stared at one spot, took a deep breath, and then I always step in with my right and then left, and then hit the outermost part of the plate and then the innermost part of the plate, and then it's ready to go.
It's almost subconscious to this point.
Yeah.
Honest.
And cool. What happens if you forget a step of that routine?
Then you just step out and then just go
do
right
it
back,
again.
Just go back to the next pitch. I mean, it's kind of hard to forget because it's...
Right, it's muscle memory. So what is it about ISU and Coach Holm and this program that, leaving Northern Colorado, you thought this was the place for you?
Honestly, they brought a lot of good energy, I feel that. I originally started talking to Artie Spees, the pitching coach, and he's just full of energy, and I feel like they brought a lot of knowledge to the table and a lot of resources that would help me gain more knowledge and skills that would help me like get further along in my baseball career. So I feel like that's what attracted me the most to the ISU program.
We talked a little bit before the show about the different positions you have played just overall as a baseball player. How does that help to the advantage of you being more of a versatile player for this team? And, you know, where could you possibly see yourself playing other than your primary position?
Honestly, like, it all started with being, like, primarily playing shortstop, like, growing up. And a lot of coaches talk about, like, coaches like to recruit shortstops because they're pretty athletic, so they can move them anywhere. Like, they can move them into the outfield, they can play at first, third, wherever. So, honestly, like, playing short really helped me build, like, a strong foundation. So now, like, I feel comfortable playing third because I played third a little bit at Northern Colorado my freshman year, and then I played short in high school, like, growing up, and then now it's second, of course. But, like, I feel comfortable playing first. I feel like a lot of it is the same movements. You still have to be really good with your hands and feet. And, honestly, it's just the different view.
What's your favorite spot to hit in the order?
Oh, dang. Either one or two, honestly. I feel like last year I hit a lot of two, which has been nice because you can kind of see what the pitcher has, like, before you actually get into the box if you're hitting two. But one is kind of fun too because, like, you set the tone for the game. Like, you get the team rolling and then everyone gets rolling.
What can also set the tone for the game is the walk-up song. And I know the season's a little far away, but do you have any plans what your walk-up song is going to be this season?
I think I'm going to go with Prices by Lil Uzi Vert.
Good choice.
I've heard that.
I mean, I was hoping you'd say whatever WZND is playing on the radio, but that's a good choice as well.
Is that walk-up song and all part of, you know, your pre-bat routine that you were talking about? Like, is things down to that nature? Is that, like, important to you when you go up, step up to the plate?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, like, guys like a slow country song to, like, calm them. But, like, for me, it's kind of like a, all right, this song is going to get me going. Like, it all starts with, like, the rhythm and, like, your walk and just your plate presence, honestly.
See, I'm no good because if it were me and I was doing my walk-up song, I would have no control and my legs would get to moving. I'd start to dance. I would be thrown off of the game completely. So that's why I'm behind the desk and not at the mound.
I think one of the most underrated things in baseball, like we played like a non-competitive game called the Fell Hall World Series.
Every episode we have to get back to.
Yeah, we played the TV station. And just like even just getting into the batter's box and that, my heart was racing. Like I can't imagine what it's like playing in a D1 baseball field. And then also too, I had to ask, with it being the off season, what's your day to day look like in the off season compared to in season?
The day to day in the off season is kind of like you have weights Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, and then you're going to class right after that, and then you're going straight to practice, and then usually on Thursday, Fridays, and Saturdays, we're inter-squatting. So, honestly, I mean, once you fall into that routine of wake up, weights, eat, class, practice, like, it's kind of just repetitive. But in season, it's more of a make sure you're ready for game day. It's get your reps in, get ready for the game, and then play the game.
You talked a little bit earlier, and right now, about your schedule being kind of a tedious one and grueling one. How is it that you are able to manage that along with all the other things that you may have in your personal or, you know, academic, you know, life?
A lot of it is just something that you develop over time. Like in high school, my school schedule was pretty rigorous and so was my like athletic side of it. So you kind of learn to do your homework on time or like do homework during lunch or whenever you have free time. Like utilize it.
It builds a certain different type of sense of discipline, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. You really have to be disciplined with it. You got to find time to eat. You got to have sometimes you meal prep, whatever it is. But I think it's a skill that you develop over time.
And so you've played in Hawaii, you've played in Northern Colorado, and now Illinois, of course. So you're a pretty well traveled person. When it comes to traveling for baseball, like what's your go to like decompression thing? Like do you watch movies, play cards with the boys, or what's the play?
Oh. I feel like it would be video games, honestly. Like,
okay.
Whenever you have free time, like sometimes after homework is all done and you just want to relax, it'd probably be just video games and kicking it with the boys.
What video games in particular?
I've been playing the show quite a bit. I've also been playing like some COD and Apex, I think, a little bit.
Yeah, very cool.
So you talk about Bregman and you talk about being a big fan of MLB The Show, so I assume you are a fan of following Major League Baseball. Is there any team growing up or now that you really were a big fan of?
We talked about it earlier.
I must not have been in the room. These guys had some extra time off.
Yeah. I don't really watch a ton of baseball, honestly. I mainly just follow guys. And,
all right, then what's? I'll rephrase my question. What is the top team if you can pick any team to play online on the show? Aside from like Diamond Dynasty, like if you have to play as one set roster, which team are you going with?
Probably go with the Yankees.
I can't go bad with them.
I kind of followed them ever since Jeter has been with them, but I don't really keep track of it that much. I know Judge is doing extremely well.
You know, because you said it, you know, you do all of this preparation during the week, watching film in the gym, and then, you know, when it's time for game time, when you're done with all of that, you kind of want to just decompress and be away from the sport. So yeah, I don't blame you for
not really watching.
A lot of players actually have said that they have done that, where they just don't watch the sport that they play. So.
So what is it about your major? You were telling us a little bit about, you said it's within business that is specifically attracted to you, and what do you want to do after you're done here at ISU or with baseball in general?
I kind of want to do something along the lines with real estate or like real estate investing, or maybe that's selling like insurance. I'm really not too sure. Right now it's kind of just been baseball that I've been focused on mainly, but I know I have some family friends back home that do like some loan investing and stuff like that.
So going into this year, the preparation has been everything that you have made it to be. What has been the one thing that you have wanted to see a big jump in improvement in your personal game?
Honestly, I feel like my speed.
Your speed?
Yeah.
What aspects of the speed help on the baseball field?
Just getting to balls that you think like, oh, I wouldn't have gotten to that before, or stealing or running or base, like turns. And honestly, I feel like that would be like the next step for me. That would improve my game a lot. It would be increasing my speed. And Coach Holm kind of, that was his big thing when he got me here. He was like, we're going to make you faster. So I was like, okay, perfect. I'm done. I'm in. Like, that's what I wanted to do. But we're kind of progressing in the right direction right now. So hopefully it stays that way. And
so the ICU baseball program is a group that has been in the Missouri Valley Conference playoffs a couple times, most recently, I believe, 2019. So it's been a couple of years, but this is a somewhat successful program. What is it over this year, maybe even next year? I believe you have an extra year eligibility, correct?
Yep.
So what is it over the next 2 years that you think you're aiming for, aside from just maybe making it back to the playoffs, both just individually and as a team player?
As a team right now, I feel like we look really good. We have a lot of returning pitchers coming back, and we have a lot of talented freshmen, I would say. Normally, like when freshmen come in, they're like a little bit all over the place, but we have some really good freshmen like Shai Robinson and Daniel Pacella. Like, they're really advanced for freshmen. Like, like Daniel Pacella earlier, he has had like 4 or 5 home runs on the fall already, and it's like it's impressive to see. And Shai is just like, their ability to slow the game down as a whole is really impressive. And I feel like we're continuing in the right direction of like building the program and potentially reaching like maybe even going to the College World Series. But
love to hear that. If that's the goal, then I think it's going to be an exciting baseball season. Thank you to Shai for joining us here today on the Red Zone. You're going to see him and his teammates out from Duffy Bass Field starting this spring. But I think we're going to take a quick break. But thank you for joining us, Shai. We really appreciate it.
Best of luck this season.
Absolutely. We will be right back on the Red Zone.
I'm Dan Muller, basketball coach of your Illinois State Redbirds, and you're listening to the Red Zone only on 1033 WZND.
We're joined in the studio now with another guest, our very own Ryan Gray of WZND News and Sports. You know, I've covered a lot of volleyball over the last 2-3 years between my time at the Vedette and now at ZND, also TV10. I've just seen a lot of volleyball, but I think the one person who I can correctly say in this student media who's seen more volleyball is Ryan, because it seems like every game Ryan's there cheering on the ISU volleyball team or announcing for us,
yeah,
or covering
pretty,
it for us.
Pretty good calls.
Yeah, I had a call on Saturday or Sunday alongside Tim Zalabek. And Ryan, before we talk a little bit about Redbird volleyball, how are you?
I'm just vibing.
Just vibing.
Straight booling.
Yeah. He was hanging out in the hallway as we waited for Shai's interview to finish, and now we have him on now as our next guest to talk. I know we're a little out of order because we already talked about the NBA, but let's go back to some Redbird sports and talk about the ISU volleyball team. And it hasn't been a good time so far in conference, Ryan. What have you seen?
Honestly, like, I know last year's was like a dominant year with us going to the the divisional championship, at least for MVC winning that and then going to the NCAA tournament. We were dominant going to that, and now it's just been, we've relied on a lot of the freshmen this year. I think at least the game that I called with our boy Tim Zalabek, I think there's like 5 freshmen on the court in one time, which is just,
yeah,
it's just a lot to see, at least for the first like a game in the middle of the year against Valpo.
Well, I think Allie talked about it, Allie Matters, I should say, in her post-game press conference over the weekend. She talked a little bit about how she feels like they had to go to a lot of the freshman players because of injury. But I felt like maybe there was chances to play some more veterans, and it was just trying to get the freshmen more time on the court. Whether that means that they would win the game, she wants to get those freshmen more comfortable. So I think there is a light at the end of the tunnel here, even in this season, as those freshmen start to warm up to the bright lights.
But, you know, there are benefits to that, playing your younger, you know, maybe a little bit more unexperienced players, is that it does gain them that experience to be able to go out and compete, especially when you're playing, you know, in interconference games. It does something to your roster when you're able to just plug and play different types of players because they all have similar amounts of experience, and it looks like that's what Coach Allie Matters is doing here.
I think, like, we can chalk this up to at least growing pains. And you see with, like, a younger squad, you're going to have to, like, it's a longer schedule than you're probably used to. And then also, not to mention, your veterans have to carry a little bit more of the load, not only physically, but emotionally, too. And I remember I was in a press conference with Allie Matters, and she was talking about how against Valparaiso, Sarah Kushner swung at 56 balls, which is a lot. It's a lot to ask of one player in one game.
Mm-hmm.
And you also said, like, injuries, too. You're going to run into that in the middle of the season. It just really stinks to see that they're not doing so well in conference play, which is really important.
So now here in the middle of the interview, we got to talk a little bit about what exactly it is we are talking about with this early schedule. They lost to Evansville to open the conference season following a solid non-con season, and then they beat Indiana State at Indiana State, but since then have fallen to Valpo and UIC at home and Bradley just the other night at Bradley. And all of those losses coincidentally came in four sets, a lot of which they won the first set or the second set and then just fell in the remaining. So these are games that they will be able to start winning going forward. It's not that they don't have the conditioning to go all five sets. I think it's just a matter of making sure everyone, especially the younger players, are comfortable on court. And one thing we have seen is that they have the ability to turn it around even in the middle of the season.
I personally went to the Valparaiso game and did press for WZND, and I wrote an article online if you want to check that out. But
nice plug.
Shameless plug. But Valparaiso, like, I don't even think the Redbirds played bad. Like, I watched them, and I was like, that's definitely a point. And then Valparaiso just had an answer for everything. Their defense was stifling, to say the least. And Allie Matters definitely hammered on that in the press conference as well.
Yeah, honestly, for these Redbirds, they do have some great offense through, like, the freshman of, like, let's say, Ada Schoedwald, who's been truly dominant through this, like, I know, what, 16 games so far this season? And it's just been... You do have to rely on, let's say, the veterans, but also I remember Caitlin Prasinski does have a bigger role, at least it seems, this season than the prior seasons.
Well, David and I got to interview Caitlin last week, and she talked a lot about how it feels like both with the switch and losing some of their other players from last year and the switch in coaching and just her becoming an upperclassman now, she does feel a little bit that she is in a new role. And I hate to say it, but maybe there is some kind of pressure there that naturally they'll just start to get more used to, and then the wins will start coming.
Well, you know, it's an adjustment, especially when you're moving into a bigger role on any athletic team. It does some, you have to be able to build that camaraderie, that trust within, you know, some of the younger pieces on your team that, you know, when the game gets into the late stages, someone needs to make that big play. I'm going to take the initiative to try to make that big play. And if I don't, I know I have my teammates behind me to be able to help clean up anything that I haven't been able to address.
And I would say, so they sit at 500 now at a total record of 8-8. And would you say that this is their first stretch of, like, true adversity? I mean, like, conference play, it's a lot more important, especially towards the standings. Oh, yeah. At the end of the year, you just lost to your arch nemesis in Bradley. The theme of the season we started at the beginning of the year was resiliency. And the only way to do that is you got to end the streak, because they're on a streak right now.
There's a lot of games left.
There is a lot of games left, and they still got Valparaiso. They're going to get UIC again.
Indiana State, again, at home, was the one team they've beat so far this year, and those just a couple of games, or in conference.
Well, it was tough watching them lose to Evansville, too, because Evansville's record was atrocious. It was like 2-13 when they lost to Evansville, which I think when you lose to a bad team, that can really shake your confidence moving forward.
And you just said it right there. They lost to Bradley 3-1, and they're 5-12, 1-4 in the MVC. You said it when the season first started, we talked about resiliency. You can't have resiliency unless you go through something that needs to be overcome, persevered. This is a long year. There are going to be ups and downs. This is a new head coaching staff. It's going to take some time to be able to gel and get everybody into, you know, a certain flow that is going to produce wins.
I think Steven Tyler from Aerosmith said it best. You got to know how to lose to know how to win.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
Personally, I believe that this team can bounce back. They have the talent. They beat a 25th-ranked national team in U of I, and they played a really tough game against Marquette, too, where they took a set, correct?
Yeah. No, that Marquette matchup was also very solid. They did get swept, but there was a couple of close sets in that one, and I think they just got beat at the net they did against Valpo.
Right. So the defense... you can't teach offense in any sport. The defense will come around. And this team, it's good enough. It's talented. There's no question about it.
Yeah, especially through that offensive. Like, I think it was Sarah Kushner who's coming the first or seventh Redbird to have, what, 1,000 kills, 1,000 digs?
Yeah.
Seventh in program history.
Which, that's impressive as alone. And then try to build that program still through her, even though she is a senior this year.
Well, yeah, and I think Coach has to keep in mind that she is losing a couple of really solid players after this year, and Katie Weimerskirch, Sarah Kushner, Nicole Lund, and others, and she does realize that there is a time after this year, not to say that this year should be wasted, because I still think they have the talent and have the determination to go win the conference again.
Well, why I have a lot of confidence in Allie Matters, too, is just watching the games. They score a lot of points off of timeouts, and those are the points you need to get in sets, because those are the designed plays. Those are the designed attacks. So personally, I'm not too shook. I'm a little little concerned waiting for the answer, especially when you're losing to opponents that have a much worse record and don't have the rapport of beating ranked teams and staying in it with ranked teams.
You said it right there, though. I think when we first started this conversation, we talked about how, you know, we had seen Allie Matter start to play some of her younger, maybe more, a little bit more inexperienced players. That could be precursor to what the future could be. She wants to get these younger players some experience, knowing that she has older, more seasoned players kind of walking out next at the end of the season.
Exactly, and I think this was under Leah Johnson's role, but they have had slow starts to the season in the last 2 years. Maybe not as bad as this little skid mark has been in the last three games, but you have a lot of season left. And if we've seen one thing, especially last year, they have the ability to go on just streaks of winning games. They had a streak at the end of last year where I believe it was 8 to 10 games at the end of the conference season going into the tournament that they just didn't lose.
It was kind of an exciting weekend, too. And Allie said that it had a lot of hype behind it. It was family weekend. Football, women's soccer, and volleyball were all debuting black uniforms, which looked sharper than knives.
Yeah.
And they looked great. And she was disappointed that they had built as much hype into that. And with a young team, you might have shot yourself in the foot a little bit by building hype, because that's a lot to go into. I know all of us have played in some big moments and played, and we were athletes. Like, personally, I remember playing my first varsity game against my high school rival. I was shaking in my boots. I was not prepared for that. There was the biggest fan section I've ever seen, and I believe there was over 3,000 in attendance, so that it can shake you.
Well, magnify that to a collegiate level, exactly. And, David, I think you were going to say something similar.
Especially for those younger players that haven't really been in those types of environments, that is an adjustment within itself. You said it right there. We all have our stories where, you know, we have been in those types of environments. It's been tough to perform to a high level, but that is what separates the good players from the okay players. And if you're the Redbirds, you kind of hope that, you know, these players are able to respond to this type of environment, you know, pretty well.
It also just seemed like there was some miscommunication on the court and that could be something that you struggle with in the middle of the season. You just get out of flow, you get out of sync, especially if you're confident shaken. But I was watching the Valparaiso game, and there was just balls where I'm like, they could get to those. I've seen them do it before. They can do it again. So that's why my confidence isn't shook.
Ryan, you are going to continue to call games for us this season and be at a lot of them. What do you think should be the outlook, you know, 2 weeks into the conference season? I know they always say take it one match at a time, but looking even broader, what should be the idea now? I mean, because you're no longer that team that's coming off a conference championship and is just going to start rolling again. You had a slow start, so what's the goal now?
Honestly, I think I hate to say this, but keep going as is, because I know you still have, what, 4 seniors graduating this year,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to be inevitable. I know it sucks to hear this, but just keep going on the grind, and hopefully that you have the Ada Schoedwalds, Emily Webbers, Kaylee Clubs, then continue to step up for the Redbirds, and then just grind this out, and then they produce, which would be great.
And continue to have those veteran players be themselves and go even further, because if you can combine these freshmen gaining the confidence, which is inevitable, they will. They obviously are here at this program for a reason, and you have the veterans still confident in their own ability. All of a sudden, you see an end of the season win streak, and then you see them going right back to the conference championship.
It's a long year. You know, this season is going to be built on ups and downs, and I think one of the things that the Redbirds need to do is try to get back into a consistent flow of being in the win column, gain that momentum, gain that trust, gain that confidence to be able to, you know, string some wins together and put themselves in a better position here.
Honestly, like some of the games we've called here at WZND, the games can go to 5 sets, I think, with Braden Ferguson, like the game that ended at like 10:45 at night, and then they played again at noon the next day,
yeah.
which is just insane just to try to think
turn around, yeah.
But
you got to wonder if they break it down by, like, game at a time, or, like, you got to focus on the game, but, like, take it a set at a time, a point at a time. It'll be interesting to see what the focus of the team is moving forward.
Moving forward, just this next week, they're going to have Drake at Drake, and then they're going to have you and I, so a little bit of an Iowa road trip there before coming home and facing Indiana State, who they did beat earlier this season, and Evansville again. So those are two opportunities at home next time we see them during homecoming weekend, where the Redbirds can hope to get on track, but hopefully they start it this weekend in Iowa. What do you guys see happening over the next 2 weekends?
Get the wheels back on the bus. We're literally taking a roadie to Iowa, so hopefully they can get right. And I think sometimes a road trip is great for team bonding. That's something that I think could be crucial. Like, there's certain things that we don't see as fans. We just see the score sheets. We watch the games. But
they're human beings. They have relationships, so hopefully they can have some team bonding, make some memories, and make some wins too.
We talked about it. What better way to go into an environment and adapt to it and still be able to play with some type of great substance than homecoming weekend, mm-hmm. than on the road versus teams that have their student sections out, families out, being able to respond to that and produce winning volleyball. That is a great sign if you're the Redbirds, and it's something that I'm pretty sure Coach Allie Mattis is encouraging in that locker room.
We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to get back into some national sports action and do Pick 6, which is our weekly NFL segment. You're listening to The Red Zone.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to The Red Zone. Dane Dreyfuss has become our games-picking expert here. He picks earlier in the week what games we will pick. He sends them to us, and we have days upon days of skipping class and work and sleepless nights trying to decide the picks we will give the people.
I only live for Mondays, Thursdays, and Sundays.
Yeah,
I'll be honest. Every other day is so boring to
me. No, that's jokes, really how it's been.
Jokes aside, we do have all of our picks prepped, and we will get into it. Pick 6, you know the format already, but I'll tell you in case you don't. It's going to be Dane, David, Ryan, and I. We're going to give you our winners for 6 different NFL games, and we will also, if I remember, because I always forget, share Steve Cease's picks as well, who is our radio faculty advisor.
You on that.
I know. I have to be careful about this week because Dane's going to try and take it back from me next week if I don't give all his picks. So.
Well, I already passed you up in the standing, so I might have to take something else.
I should have taken a picture of the scoreboard so that people know. I think we are all separated by a game. I believe Demos has 16 wins.
3 weeks straight.
All the way down to myself, who has 12 wins. Dane passed me up after an abysmal week last week for myself. So Ryan,
a great week for me, though.
And a great week for Dane. Ryan holding on to a guest spot that is now in second. It wasn't first for a while, but is in second after Andy P had a fine week last week. But our first couple guests had some really
Matt
good
Cherry
week.
Hot start.
Yeah, Matt Cherry and Tim both gave him a good start. So Ryan has a lot to do today to see if he can keep the guest spot up there in the scoreboard. But,
no pressure.
I'm going to take that to the first spot guaranteed this week.
Ooh. We'll clip that audio. Right, yeah. Okay. So let's talk first about my favorite football team, the Chicago Bears. And I feel David's favorite football team. And Ryan, I don't know if we've ever talked about this. Are you a Bears guy?
I'm a Bears fan. But over the years, I became a Buffalo Bills fan.
Okay.
Bills Mafia.
Bills Mafia before they became good.
Wait, Ryan, what are you doing on the table? Oh, my gosh.
Just jumped on our studio table. He's just showing his Bills Mafia style. Bears and the Vikings. So the Vikings coming off a nice win in London, and the Bears coming off a loss last week against the Giants. We will have to see what happens here. I don't think it's a shocker to anyone that I'm going to go with the Bears. I don't have too much to say about it other than the fact that I just really like rooting for the Bears. And I think the Vikings will win this game, but I can't ever pick against them.
You know, I consider myself one of the most diehard Chicago Bears fans. But, I mean,
did you come to play?
Week by week.
Do you want to hold that in the number one spot?
It's getting a little bit tough to, you know, sit and watch this.
It's easier to pick the Bears when I'm from my last place spot from your first place spot. I get that.
It's obvious that these guys are the worst team in the NFC North, let alone maybe even the worst team in the NFC.
And the NFL, too. Don't stop there.
No, it's not the NFC. I wouldn't go that far. But, yes, in the North. At least the way they're in the direction now.
I'm going to go with the Vikings. I just don't think Bears have enough to get this win. I think they're on the road. And
they are on the road.
I don't see it. I'm going with the Vikings.
I can still chase Demos now.
Ryan.
Of course, got to go Bear Down.
Bear Down.
I will not be chasing the guest as I go Vikings. Wait, is Kirk Cousins in primetime? No. So the answer is always.
Four touchdowns.
Nothing's more scary than Justin Fields at noon. It's definitely not
nothing scarier than Justin Fields as your franchise quarterback.
I wouldn't go as far as franchise. It's year two.
You traded two first-round picks.
No. The previous regime traded two first-round picks for Justin Fields. I don't think.
You're trying some erasure right here?
No, I don't think so. I think Ryan Poles is not as attached to Justin Fields as Ryan Pace would have been. So
really not.
Let's say Justin Fields continues this streak where he's not proving himself. I don't think Poles has any issue trying to go another direction this offseason.
And I'm just going to say this really quick. I think the scariest thing is knowing that you only have two more years of good production from your star quarterback in Aaron Rodgers, and then you have Jordan Love to be
a great heir. I think Jordan Love is probably the fourth best quarterback in the NFC North, but we have to move on.
Let's hop the pond and keep talking about the Packers to London, where they will face the Giants this week, coming off a nice win against one of the NFC's best teams in the Bears. The Giants are going to take on truly one of the NFC's best teams in the Packers. And it pains me to say it, but for the second week in a row, I'm going to go with Aaron and his ragtag group of receivers in Green Bay.
Now, you know, I was telling you guys earlier, I didn't feel like myself today. I had to eat a Snickers because I looked at my notes and noticed I was giving too many props to the Packers. And as much as it pains me to say, I said a few weeks back that once Aaron Rodgers gets acclimated and accustomed to these receivers, that this will be a dangerous team to play late in the year. You know, you got Alan Lazard making plays, Randall Cobb, and some of the young guys stepping up. And it's finding it a little bit easier for Aaron Rodgers to dissect these defenses. So I'm going to go with Aaron Rodgers beating the Giants here, who beat my Bears last week.
Honestly, I would most of the time I'm going to say Packers, which I am. But Danny Dimes, though?
No, Ryan looking to looking to either take the huge lead for the guests or to just sink down to my area on the scoreboard.
Oh, but I'm still picking the Packers. Don't worry. I'm still saying.
Excited. I wrote the Giants on the paper.
Oh, I'm still don't. A-Rod still with the his. He's still an MVP back-to-back, though. Can't deny it.
Dane?
By the order of the Peaky Blinders, give me Green Bay Packers, bruv.
I like that, specifically the London. You didn't have an accent, though. You said what they would say.
It would be offensive.
It would be offensive,
I promise.
Steve said the Packers, and then the other NFC North matchup we talked about, he said the Vikings. So that leaves just myself and Ryan talking about the Bears and everyone on the Packers train this week. Let's talk about the Cowboys and Rams. That's going to be an interesting one over there on Sunday. I'm going to go with the Rams in this one. Defending champs, they're going to have to try and find a way, even coming off a bad game against the 49ers. I think they're going to find a way against a Cowboys team that has held their own without Dak Prescott, but shouldn't be too much of an issue for, hopefully, a refreshed Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Rams here. I think that that Cooper Kush luck is bound to run out sometimes, and I think that's going to be this week.
Dane, you side on that one.
I can't believe I'm doing this.
Oh no, man.
I'm riding Cooper Rush. He hasn't lost yet. NBAB? Give me N back?
Never bet against Cooper?
Never bet against Cooper, baby. Well, I'm betting against Cooper Cup. That makes no sense.
I guess you have to say Rush or Cup. You have to say never bet against Rush.
Never bet against Geddy Lee of Rush. I'm just referencing like a lot of old bands this episode. I don't know what's going on.
It must be that episode for us today. Ryan?
Going with Rams. I know it's the Cooper Rush, even though he's what had 4-0 in starts. Nah. Steve, I think it's ending today.
Steve goes with the Rams, leaving Dane on
the Lonely Island.
You're not singing it this week.
I'm not doing accents.
I put it on a tee for you to sing it this week, and you didn't do it.
I know, but it's like you wanted me to do an accent, and like I'm trying to save
the
listener
too much right
too
now.
I'm trying to save
the listener's ears of just what would not be good radio.
Now we're going to look forward to hopefully some good radio as we talk about. We're going to get into our primetime matchups. First, I want to talk about the Bengals and the Ravens Sunday Night Football divisional matchup. Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson. I think the Bengals have gotten hot, finally. Maybe it was a hangover from their season last year, but they finally got hot, and this Ravens team is nothing to be messed with, but I'm going to take Burrow and the Bengals in this one.
You know, this is kind of one of those trap games. You know, you got two talented teams, one kind of coming off of a week where they should have won, but they kind of gave up a lead versus the Bills, and then another team where they're kind of starting to really get their mojo under them in the Bengals and Joe Burrow. I think that the Ravens need this win just a little bit more, coming off of what you experienced last week, 20-3, losing at home. It's just something that you do not want to go into the next week and start a trend with just these losses that you should be winning, because they should beat the Bengals. I believe they're a more talented team, and I think they'll get the win.
That's a fantasy football pick if I've ever heard one. Demo's rocking with Lamar Jackson.
I respect only rooting for one thing. Yeah. But you don't want to also cover. You might want to cover your bets saying, well, even if Lamar is a bad game, at least I got pick six right. But
no, it's too late. He made his pick.
I respect him putting all the eggs in the basket. What are you going to say on this one, Dane?
Give me the Bengals. They just own the Ravens. Jamar Chase owns the Ravens. And they've got a fully healthy or moderately healthy T. Higgins. And I think Demo's put it best. You got the Bengals on the way up. Ravens are on the way down. It's all coming down.
Dane and I agreeing? What? That's rare. Ryan?
Going to the Ravens. I think Lamar Jackson is still going to be. I know there's hate on Lamar right. If anything, hate on Lamar right now because he's been so dominant this season. I don't think he's going to go in the down.
I'm glad I've got different picks from Demos. I've got if everything goes my way,
he'll be leading.
I will be leading.
To settle the tiebreaker here, 2-2, we have Steve Cease going with Burrow and the Bengals. So that's going to be an interesting matchup, and that has a lot of points in the line because it was a 3-2 split for us. Now looking at Monday Night Football, a lot of division fun stuff this week. The Chiefs and the Raiders have had kind of a disappointing start. The Raiders are a solid football team. I thought before the year they'd be something to be messed with. I think in our predictions I even said my upset pick was going to be that the Raiders would win that division. Obviously, that's probably not happening.
How is the Jaguars pick I made looking better?
That makes no sense to me because you think you look at Devontae Adams in that offense, even with Derek Carr kind of struggling, they should be winning games, and they kind of have that Lions thing going for them where they are scoring points, they're just not winning games.
You said it right there, though. They had the Lions thing going a few years ago. They had Matt Patricia who came from the Patriots, and he was their head coach. They didn't do good.
No.
This year, they have Josh McDaniels, who's a terrible coach in my opinion, came from the Patriots coaching tree, and it's not really gelling right now.
So I'm going to go with the Chiefs because I liked what I saw against the Bucks. I think Mahomes is back to that magic, and I think the Chiefs will get an easy win in this one. In a matchup that they've had some lot of great games, but I think this one will just be a Chiefs win.
They have had some really good games. I'm going to go with the Chiefs as well. I just don't see the Raiders, you know, contending in this game.
I'll go Chiefs as well, as we're running short on time. How about you, Ryan?
Chiefs without a doubt.
Yeah, no questions.
So that is a sweep, our second of the day behind the Green Bay Packers, and now we're looking at the Colts and the Broncos.
Broncos country, let's ride.
Thank you, Russell, for that one. That is Russell Wilson, and that is his preseason quote, Broncos country, let's ride, or Broncos country left wide, as a lot of people said after week one.
Broncos country, let's cry.
Yeah. So for all of these newfound phrases, you can assume that the Broncos have not had the start that they had imagined. But I would say the Colts haven't had the start they'd imagined either. I thought the Colts would be a solid team out of the AFC.
And then they beat the Chiefs.
It's been all over the place. It's been so hard to predict these games. But
it's because Mercury was in retrograde.
I guess. Dame must have read his horoscope this morning. But I think in this one, I went back and forth all day. This is like the hardest game for me to pick. And, of course, it's the first of the week, so that sets the tone for if I'm going to have a good week and pick them, because if I get the first one wrong, I'm immediately mad. I had the Colts for the longest time, but then I thought about Shaq Leonard not playing, Jonathan Taylor not playing, and I thought, you know, I might have to go. Wilson is probably a future Hall of Famer. He's got to find a way to win some games in a season. So I'm going with the Broncos.
See, that was like my thought process too. And my strategy last week of betting on the Bengals or betting on the Dolphins and then taking the Bengals in pick six worked to perfection. But I can't
be disappointed.
I can't even do that this week. Like, I'm so heavy on I bet on the Broncos.
Riding with the Broncos. Yeah.
Broncos country. Let's ride.
It's a pun that writes itself.
So this was a tough decision for me as well because of, like you said, the injuries play a big factor in it. I think Javonte Williams just got announced that he was out for the year. We got Jonathan Taylor, who has a lingering injury. He's going to be out. So it's coming down to the quarterback play of both these teams, and I am not putting Matty Ice up against Russell Wilson. I'm going with the Broncos. Broncos country, let's ride.
Ryan Gray.
Bronco country, let's ride. Because I know, got to rely on fantasy this week. He's my starting QB, but let's ride.
So, Steve also said the Broncos. I think this is the only time all year where we've had three sweeps, but the games that we didn't sweep are pretty split. So there is a lot of points on the board, and I think that's going to do it for this segment and this edition of The Red Zone. Thank you, guys. Thank you to Shea Kubo and Ryan Gray for joining us as guests, for Dane Dreyfus, David Moses, and myself, Mikey Frinelli. Thank you for joining us, and have a great night.
Hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again. Download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 1033 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.